Back to call to order the program projects and operations subcommittee meeting, May 7th, 2019, 6:30 p.m. We have notification of the Open Meetings Act posted on the back wall. Before we proceed with the meeting, I'd like to read a copy is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for tonight's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given the opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the directors will discuss the item and take action. We ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Yeah.
Here.
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 Item number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
And motion and second. Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Hi. I have an affidavit, which is proof of publication of tonight's meeting and become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation amendment number two to JEO Consulting Group Professional Services Agreement for the independent external review of Missouri River R-613/R-616 levy accreditation. Paul Wood.
All right, good evening. Dan Fricke with JEO Consulting Group is here with me tonight. Just to go through this, this is part of the overall levy project on our 616-613. JEO has provided consulting services throughout the design of the project to fulfill the IEPR requirements. It's kind of an independent review requirement of the 408 requirements from the Corps of Engineers. So through that procedure, they have gone through, we did do one amendment when they were going through the design review because we ended up reviewing the 100% plans four times, as we kept making revisions and getting stuff, comments back from the Corps, and then they would have to review them as well. So, went through that. They didn't quite spend all of that. You should see there's about $37,000, remaining under the existing amendment and existing contract. So following up on that, then we do have a requirement as we go through construction, anything that changes different to the plans that were approved by the Corps, any different construction methods, and then just overall following construction to kind of give an approval that it was done the way that it was designed is a requirement of this process as well. So Dan here has went through those requirements, looked at what it would take to pretty much, one, review the construction as we go through it, two, potentially review any changes. For instance, we know there's a change that will need to be reviewed as we do the construction of the permanent closure under Highway 370 on the upper end of R-616. As you go under Highway 370 there, we have to close where the railroads go through there. But we're always planning to make a permanent closure there. But in terms of actually constructing that and doing it within the time frame that a BN would actually close the tracks, we needed to change the foundation for that. So that's one thing we already know. We'll go through Dan's review and stuff. So that's all I really have. Do you have anything else on the requirements, Dan?
No, that covers it. I mean, Paul says I'm doing the review. I'd say the JEO team is. There's a number of, I think there's probably six or seven engineers with specific specialties, you know, structural, geotechnical, et cetera. And so that's the team that is comprised of those professionals. And so they'll be, yeah, reviewing stuff. And I think we've tried to find a good balance of, you know, what's required versus, you know, we're not looking to be super onerous or anything like that. We're just kind of looking to make sure we're doing what the requirements state. So we've tried. I think that's what's represented.
Thank you. Can we have a motion on this?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak for this item? Directors?
I have a question. Yeah, several, actually. So this is a federal government requirement. The Army Corps of Engineers requires you to overlook FIRA, what they're doing, or what's happening here exactly? Yes?
Yeah.
go ahead and follow up what the requirements stem from, I guess.
Yeah, so as part of the Section 408 permit, as part of this, this falls underneath it's called a Type 2 Safety Assurance Review. And those types of reviews are associated with life safety issues. So in the core, you know, there are certain modifications of a levee system or a dam that don't have safety issues, or they're relatively minor. They're major modifications, obviously, and so there's life safety issues with it. It triggers the requirement to have a safety assurance review and the IEPR, and so that's, the requirement is part of the process. And so it was back in 2012, I believe it was, when this whole thing got started. There was a request for proposals and procurement, and we've been, you know, on board since then.
And so, you have to be here. We can't get along without you.
Yeah.
Essentially, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I always thought fire was pretty capable, but yet we've got you guys looking over their shoulders, and that's the way it has to be. Essentially.
Looking over everybody's shoulder.
Yeah.
And so the actual amount of work you do, is that specified by Army Corps of Engineer regulation, or you just kind of estimate what has to be done?
It's a little bit vague. It's a little bit ambiguous. You know, it depends on the amount of what happens in design. Certainly was kind of ambiguous. That's, I think, representative of what you see with the remaining 37,000. We estimated what we thought it would be, and we came in quite a bit under. You know, we try to use our good judgment and just say, you know, focus on the stuff that are life safety issues, major issues, and we're going to do the same thing.
So I assume you've been working with fire all along then? Or do you work together on this, or are you completely separate from what you're doing?
Technically, we are contracted through the NRD to be independent, but we do collaborate and coordinate with the designer just to make life easier.
Okay.
They're mainly reviewing what's being put together by fire.
Right. I didn't realize that was even necessary. But it is necessary.
The Corps had to have that report and that checklist to approve our 408 permit.
Are we getting reimbursed by anybody for any of this that's coming completely out of our pocket?
Just the partners that sponsor the state and the city of Omaha, Bellevue, and Clark County.
So approximately what percentage of their bill is being reimbursed? We're sharing how much of it with who?
I don't know if we broke that out or not. So, say a $30 million project, and we've got $22 million of it, I guess, from other partners. Yeah, of other sources. So,
other sources.
Yeah.
And so the same percentage would apply to their bill to us?
Roughly.
Approximately? Okay, thank you.
If you'd ask for, we don't. Here.
They don't?
It's
whatever it's required.
After a lot of meetings by and mostly department. So, you'd ask for, they say,
more of a global question. If the Corps says we don't need it because we trust the engineers in the first place, and what we were talking about earlier about the Corps reform that's so essential, would this be one of the items that we have to? As a matter of fact, the 408 permit, that's going to be. What's one going to be perhaps?
Well, we tried to eliminate the 408 requirement from any local sponsor, but that didn't have enough support on one side of the aisle in Congress. So now it will be just see if we can get some of the erroneous regulations of the 408 either lifted or streamline the process. But
eventually, as we work to reform the Corps, the dollar savings would be down the road.
Right.
So
any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Hi.
Thank you.
Item number 7, review and recommendation of Phase 9 of engineering contract with Olson for professional services for Pigeon Jones Site 12A. Terry Schumacher and Tony Bombert Olson.
Correct. Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening.
I heard you talking about the 408 reform. Is 404 included in that?
It's all regulatory. Really.
All right. We'll be talking about 404.
Whatever number you want to throw on there.
Anyway, we are bringing forward the Phase 9 of the engineering contract with Olson's for professional services for Pigeon Jones 12A. If you've read the lengthy memo, and you can see this has some history to it going back to 2007. So there's been a lot of projects as part of this whole agreement, and it is planned for this to be the final amendment to this agreement so we can move forward from here. I guess the reason for this amendment is largely due to the fact that the 404 permitting process has become a moving target for us. A little bit of history. Olson's and myself met with the Corps of Engineers last June and said we're ready to submit our 404 permit. And the project manager at that time for the Corps said, well, wait till September. You'll have your permit by next June. Everything will be good to go. And we're like, well, okay, if that's what you would like, that's what we will do. So we submitted that permit, and Tony may be able to add some of the history of this. Anyway, in September, everything seemed like it was on track. In midstream, the person with the Corps who was working on this permit for PJ-12A, it got reassigned to another project manager, and then the rules or targets seem to have changed. We were told to basically use the template that we use for Pigeon Jones 15 or big recreation area that we, you know, got a permit for, and now it's kind of like that's not really good enough. So we've got to do more extensive cultural resources investigation. We've got to look at our wetland mitigation area. It's kind of flip-flop back and forth on what that should be, and so it continues to take more time and effort on everybody's part to try and figure out the solution so we can get our permit and construct this project and move on. Anyway, I would be happy to answer any questions. This amendment would be for $64,524, and if approved, would increase the overall project contract to a not-to-exceed amount of $2,508,499. Like I say, we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Anyone in the – first of all, do we have a motion on this item?
No move.
Motion. Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item? Directors?
Yeah. As always, could you explain what cultural resource investigation is?
So as part of the 404 permit, you basically have to investigate potential impacts to historic resources, being historic properties, buildings, but also archaeological sites. So the 404 permit has to comply with Section 106, which would be impacts to any of those types of resources, just like threatened and endangered species. So it's basically a condition of the permit. So it's a study that would be required within that permit. And I believe previously for this project, we thought NRCS might be providing that study. And so they were unable to provide that study. So we're going to be then working through a sub-consultant to get that information to the Corps in support of the permit application.
Okay. And so when you're done with this 4,000, we might demo the project. But what else has to be done? Is there physically work that has to be done then? Also, more construction type work? This is just a consulting fee to these guys, correct?
Correct.
$4,000, but then they're going to recommend something at the end of this?
No, we're going to have – we've got the final design. Mm-hmm. We've got the land rights. The DNR permit is ready to go. I'm not sure we have it, but it's
– right.
But we need a 404 permit to proceed with construction and basically to proceed with advertising for – bids and that sort of thing.
But this is a different structure.
Right. Do we have any idea with how much construction will be involved in this particular project? We don't know that at this point.
Well, the cost estimate for the structure itself?
Yeah. Yes.
It's $1.4 million.
Okay. That's pretty firm.
Well, it's engineer's estimate. I mean, you go out to bid and you hope that's your bids right. Are lower.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
Kaser?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Item number 8, review and recommendation of Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership and a Local Agreement. Lori Glasses.
Hi. Good evening. In 2015, Sarpy County began investigating options for sanitary sewer service south of the Papio Watershed. To date, that has been mostly agricultural land or large acreages with septic system, but it's been targeted by several developers for new structures. So as they were developing this plan, we also said, you know, wait a minute, we want to make sure that there's a good plan in place for stormwater management before we start building new developments in this area. So in 2016, the Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership was formed. This was based largely on the Papio Partnership, but we adopted a 3-year interlocal agreement to cooperatively start to work on a watershed management plan. That agreement expires on June 30th of this year, so we have before you tonight a new interlocal that will extend the partnership another 5 years. That will help us to then develop our watershed management plan more fully and start to potentially implement projects based on the resources and the impacts development might have in that area. The interlocal agreement before you is significantly the same as the previous one. There were only minor changes. The district contributes $66,000 per year towards the operation of the partnership. That will remain the same. The other communities of Bellevue, Gretna, Papillion, and Springfield, along with Sarpy County, they contribute based on their population and land area. So that formula changes per year. The district's contribution does not. We've been working with FIRA, and Mike will give a presentation in just a minute on the work that they've done so far to start to develop this watershed management plan. We estimate that we need about another 3 years for the watershed plan to be complete, and then at that point we would start to implement changes. Again, the changes to the agreement from the last one are very minor, mostly just catching the typos we didn't catch last time, and a few minor updates to the policies, again, mostly to clarify things that have been brought to our attention. With that, I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Can we have a motion?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
Motion second. Is there anyone in the public who wishes to speak to this item? Directors?
Yeah. So how much actual construction is going on now in this basin for the South Sarpy?
So the new Facebook data center is there, and I know there's a couple more going on. It's pretty minor. It's not large subdivisions, just because the sanitary sewer service isn't there. So, you know, with an operation like Facebook, they don't necessarily need a lot of connections, and so they're able to handle that. But the agency, they call it the agency, I don't know what the term is, but the sewer agency in Sarpy County, they are moving forward with trying to fund construction of that sanitary sewer to open that.
So then do they work in conjunction with what fire engineering comes up with then as far as stormwater management?
The sewer agency, not necessarily. You know, we certainly are aware of what they're doing and we're reviewing that, but they're really laying out the lines and how to deal with the water treatment. And they have hired HDR to do that work, and their team are doing that. So our plan would then, anything that FIRA develops would then be codified by the individual communities so that when those developments are built, they are built to these standards that we've all agreed on.
And there are developments that are in the process of being formulated at this time?
I don't know of anything specific.
Springfield has about 110 unit or housing development that's going on. Yeah. So that's not huge, but it's starting to pick up.
But I guess my question is, until the time FIRA develops this plan, what happens to anything going on at this point? In other words, if it's not a developed plan, how do they adhere to it at some point? They don't even know what it is. So
yeah, so we do have policies that were adopted back in 2016. They're largely based on the PAVIO policies.
Okay. They just go by those.
Yeah, and so they go by those. They're not necessarily the final policies that we're going to have, but we did want to have something in the case of, you know, these smaller developments that are coming through. So there is, you know, codes in place to make sure that they're not increasing runoff and that they're following erosion and sediment control rules and regulations.
Who enforces that?
The individual communities.
Okay. Not the NR. No. And there's going to be fees for every lot sold, or like Facebook? So
yeah.
Is that, that's already in effect, isn't it?
Yes, okay. that was put in effect in 2016.
Right. Okay, thank you.
So, Laura, how much does Papillion and Gretna contribute, roughly? I know it's different for every town.
Roughly? I don't think I have that. Sorry. So I believe Papillion is somewhere around $30,000, and Gretna is around, well,
$12,000.
Yeah.
It's in here somewhere.
Yeah, in the packet from there, it's an exhibit C or D.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
it's exhibit C.
Yeah.
Papillion is 30,000. Gretna is 12.
Yeah. And you can see that the formula that we use to determine their contributions. You know, as Papillion annexes and Sharpie County loses, they want to pay less, and Papillion doesn't necessarily want to pay more, but that's how we've agreed to calculate that.
Okay, thank you.
Director Deeser?
I'll move staff recommendation.
Yeah, I think
we're
already doing. We got a motion a second.
Yeah, because now we're doing board questions. Any other questions from the board?
Are we obligated to be active Facebook users for the amount of money they gave us?
No.
Don't answer that.
Because there may be one of their competitors that might be coming.
Is that facility still under construction, or is it done?
A phase of it is done, but I think there's continual.
I think it's near perpetual.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's going to be another one to the east of the one they just finished.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
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 Hi. Thank you. Item number 10, review and recommendation of Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership and a local agreement. Laura?
Not nine. Miss nine.
Miss nine?
Yes.
Review and recommendation of Southern Sarpy Watershed Partnership Professional Services Contract Amendment 2 with FIRA Engineering. Laura and Mike, I didn't need to leave you out here. I was wondering why you're still sitting there. Go ahead.
Okay. So to continue on the work of the partnership, we had hired FIRA to start the watershed management plan in 2016. That was always meant to be a three-phase project because it was just of a large enough scale that we couldn't determine what the overall thing would be at the time. Mike is going to give a short presentation on the work that they've done today and the proposed scope of phase two.
So up on the screen here, for everybody to see that, so talking about what we're doing here, and we're just going to give a little bit of a recap. There's a lot of information here. There's a draft. We'll show you a little bit about the draft study that exists, and if anybody would like to read that, of course, that's available for you as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about what we've done in phase one and what we're going to be doing here in this next scope or in the next phase. Okay, sorry. So this is essentially Sarpy County here, and the colored area, the shaded area that falls underneath this line is what's known as the ridge. And so everything that's inside the line up here, of course, drains within the Papillion Creek watershed. So basically all the sewers, et cetera, come down along West Branch and South Branch there in that part of the watershed and go to the Papillion Creek Wastewater Treatment Plant out on the Missouri River there. Everything that's inside the shaded area, everything's out on this side drains either to the Platte upstream of this or the Elkhorn River, as you can see out there where the Elkhorn is right here. So what we're focused on is these three basins right here. We got Buffalo Creek Basin, Springfield Creek Basin. Over here is Weibel Creek Basin. And then there's this other area in here that's pretty lowland. Will probably be the last area for the development that happens there, but it's kind of an unnamed area as well. But we also did some preliminary work in this basin as well.
as Lori's mentioned before, the sewer study that's going on, they're really dictating the direction and the order in which the county develops, or the southern part of the county develops. I mean, you can't have a development without sewer. And so there are some temporary things that what they call some land trading in place right now where they've made an agreement to say, we've got 900 acres that's in the Papillion Creek watershed that we're going to, these communities, Papillion, Gretna, are going to promise not to develop. In exchange, you let us do some other development down here in the southern part of the watershed, and we're going to pump over the ridge into the existing sewer system just to make sure we don't overload it. So that's the agreement that all of the different communities are involved that worked out to date. So development really does drive the order at which it is happening. And obviously it makes more sense for them from a development standpoint and just the continuity of what they're doing to do that kind of development rather than just to wait and say, we're just developing Papillion Creek now, we're going to do the rest later. So that's kind of what's going on. We're following their lead. As Lori mentioned, there are interim policies in place, but also we're working on how does that affect what we're going to do overall and take a look, try to use our crystal ball as best we can to say what's going to happen down the road and make sure we're not doing anything now that we're going to regret we didn't think about later. So I'm going to start hustling a little bit more. So this was phase one, the project schedule. We started back in January of 2017. We did three workshops here, and we've really been focusing on four things in this watershed. Based on the future conditions of hydrology, how much water is going to be coming down the pipe there, how does that affect hydraulics? You know, when you have more water, how does that spread out, et cetera? How does that affect the creek channels of stormwater, et cetera? And then stream stability. Technically, that's been the most challenging part of Southern SRP. A lot of the challenge that you're hearing about now in Papillion Creek watershed is Papillion grows to the west and grows to the north. As we get into those higher, lust-deposited soils, they become very highly erosive and it causes a lot of problems for developments, et cetera. You've heard the term setbacks, et cetera, and all these things that are going on with the creek channels. Well, we're starting to find some more difficulty there. That exists everywhere in Southern Sark County. So how we handle those future issues and how those issues are affected by change and age in the watershed, but also changes in hydrology and hydraulics due to development and changes in land use in the watershed is what we're trying to predict and work for. So after we went through those three technical things, I'll hit on it real briefly. Just recently we met and talked about phase two, which is now that we know what some of those baseline conditions are, what the future conditions are, what are some of the things we can do to mitigate the negative impacts of those different things from those technical standpoints? So this is the project schedule that Lori talked about, with phase one being mostly the development of baseline conditions. We actually did some baseline hydraulics, was originally going to be in phase two. We did fit that within the resources that were available in phase one. So in phase two, we're going to go a little bit further into some of the work that could have been done in phase three in terms of the detail of the alternative development that is happening here. So with that, a quick summary there. This is the work that we completed in phase one. So the hydrology and hydraulics, not only the baseline conditions, but what can we expect for changes due to future conditions there. The stream stability and environmental resources of the creek channels. What can we expect in there for the degradation of the stream, stream bank stabilization, stream grade destabilization, and what does that mean to development and how do we plan for it from a stormwater standpoint. We also looked at water quality. There's not a lot of baseline data available for water quality in Southern Sark County because there isn't a lot of development down there now and a lot to test that. We do, of course, have a lot of water quality information on the Lower Platte River, which is everything here drains into, so that's important. And during this, also just recently, the Lower Platte River Basin Water Quality Management Plan is approved now or near approval. Just got approved recently, so that kind of took care of a lot of the technical aspect with the water quality stuff, and so basically we're adopting the findings of that plan into what we need to do here. So the partnership has a draft plan, and which is it really can be considered a working document through this, the process, and as we grow and as we continue to do work, some of the interim policies may change, some of them may not until we're totally complete. So hydrologic baseline conditions, just real quick, what we did was in the map here, everywhere you see a star, there's a list down here on the table, and what we looked at was, okay, for a 2, a 10, and a 100 year, just looking at changes in land use due to some certain amount of imperviousness, and here we chose 30, these are the expect increases we can expect in the volume of runoff that comes down there. So we know we add driveways, rooftops, et cetera, there's going to be more water that's coming off the agricultural fields that are largely in the pasture land that largely makes that up now. So these 10 areas are going to be kind of the nodes or kind of the observation points, what we call the comparison nodes. And as the plan develops and as we look for different alternatives, we're going to look at those areas to say, what's the change here? And those areas were chosen by the different partners because of maybe that's where the new roadway, Platteview Road, is going to go. Maybe it's a development point, just a certain confluence in a channel, whatever. But those are going to kind of be the judgment points that we look at changes and how do we affect those. Hydraulics, we looked at some things that would happen, and you kind of see up here, we just looked at, you know, stream, general stream geometry, what's going to happen. We're going to expect continued incision of the streams, widening of streams. What does that do to elevations? You know, in general, that drops flood elevations a little bit. That doesn't mean that's really necessarily a good thing. But in general, that's what's going to happen. We also looked at stream stable slopes and said, okay, if we do get some dropping of the stream, what is that likely to mean to setbacks and kind of the top part of the stream? How much land can we potentially use? Those are some of the negative impacts we're going to look at as part of land use change and future conditions that we're going to say, how much of this makes sense to mitigate now? How much of this makes sense to mitigate as development occurs? We also looked at some baseline conditions for the stream stability. We used two different methods here to look at one thing on the left side from a technical standpoint, and on the right side from an ecological standpoint. So our partner on this project is Vireo, who has done some of the rec design for some of the sites, WP6, WP7, et cetera. Lately, Dave Ciasio recently retired, but Dave's the one who kind of brought them to Omaha and merged with his firm. So they looked at things from an ecological standpoint on the right, and we looked at things from more of a technical standpoint there on the left, and compared, and things came out pretty similar there. But we learned about what streams are in good condition now, what streams are kind of changing right now, and what streams are most likely to be more of a challenge from a technical standpoint. And just, again, establishing baseline conditions. So phase two, plan of action there, what we plan to do, the little symbols on the bottom of the screen kind of take us through what we're going to be doing there. But number one, defining the goals there. Lori talked about it, Lori just talked in the interlocal agreement there, those eight bullets, those are kind of the interim goals of the plan. Those are what were said as this is the goal of the partnership. Here's what we want to do. I'm not going to read them all to you, but kind of the normal stormwater goals there. And then we said, okay, if we're going to refine these goals and transition those goals from a big picture protection to actionable items, what do we want to do? How much do we want to reduce things, et cetera? And then we're going to ask ourselves some of these questions that we've got in here on these six bullets about how does that help us refine those goals in terms of goals that we can now use as how are we going to meet those. Once we do that, we have two surveys as a part of this next phase where we're going to look at the partnership to go out and look at the partnership and expand that just beyond the people who kind of normally participate in the week-to-week, month-to-month meetings, but other people in the county to see what does everybody want to see as a part of this. And so we're starting a public input process, although the public likely isn't going to be brought in until the end of phase two or the beginning of phase three, but we're going to start working with watershed technical groups along with the partnership in phase two. So the next thing we're going to do is take those goals from a qualitative standpoint and say, how do we turn them into a quantitative number? What's our real goal we want to look at in different parts of the watershed? What do we want to do to curtail volume of runoff, maximum watershed, you know, water surface elevation changes, et cetera? And so that gives us the ability as engineers, we need numbers to work towards and say, okay, what are we going to do within this next phase to say, what do we have to do to reduce those numbers or to mitigate those numbers from the impact? To do those, the alternatives that will form and what we're kind of informally now calling the PPAs, so what projects, what policies, and what actions can occur in the watershed that would be part of the plan and recommendations in the plan ultimately to help us mitigate those change in future conditions that we decide that we want to try to mitigate. And then, of course, look for which of those work the best. And, you know, there are several things out there that can help with address several things. Hey, this can help with hydrology, hydraulics, and water quality. So we want to try to look at those and collectively, what's the biggest bang for our buck out there as far as these PPAs that we can do to help collectively mitigate as many of these changes as possible. Partnership survey about what some of those policies and those alternatives should be. And then get into actual alternatives development. So this is similar to the 404 work that you talked about. We're trying to do some work now so that when water-dependent projects in the future come through the watershed, we've done a lot of this work and we don't have to go back and reinvent the wheel. We've got to that point really in the Papillion Creek watershed where we have a pretty defined process for 404s, which is nice. We're going to do the best we can to lay that groundwork early as part of this plan so that we can make it easy. And so that's some of the alternatives we looked at. And this table is just from some other project elsewhere, but you can see, or actually from EPA and just what they kind of suggest, but you can see the kind of things we're looking at. How do we develop these alternatives and where can we get the most bang for our buck there? Stakeholder involvement here. So we're going to be developing what we call a technical advisory group, and this is a lot of people who, A, have technical interests in the watershed, NRCS, Corps of Engineers, DNR, et cetera, but also groups that could potentially be funding to the table. So DEQ and EPA, NRCS, you know, the plan is in place, allows us to get 319 funds in a transitioning watershed. NRCS already has some interest in a watershed. But we bring these people on not only to get them on board with the plan of action and serve as kind of a technical backup, but also because eventually we want them to help us craft a plan that they can buy into, because we want to go ask them for money down the road to help implement some of these plans. So we're going to form that technical advisor group. We've already got a lot of good interest in that. And then at the end of this, based upon where we've gone over the next year or so, form a watershed advisory group of people that live in the watershed. And the goal there is to come out and say, what would you like to see? You know, it's real easy for me to sit back here and talk about technical, you know, competency of the plan, but we also need social acceptance of the plan too. And so we want to do everything we can to make sure that the watershed and the people in the watershed that live, work, and play there are acceptable, and the development community, of course, as well, is acceptable to the changes we want to make. Once we do that, do all of our alternatives assessment, et cetera, now we're working on screening these things down to come to the actual plan itself. And then at the very end of this phase, that would be the goal is to phase three is going to be the actual writing of the detailed plan based upon everything that occurs in this phase. So that's the end of everything. I promise I'll be short. That's probably longer than I wanted to be. But this is just the actual scope of work. As you can see on the left, the tasks that have been broken down, project management, stakeholder engagement. We talked about goal development, alternative development, policy changes, and then continuing agency coordination there. Those are the task items that the contract's been broken down to.
Thank you. We could have need a motion on this item.
Your staff recommendation.
Motion. Second, anyone in the public wish to speak to this item? Directors?
I have one small question. Do you give this presentation to all the different partners of the partnership or just us?
So all the partners come to a monthly meeting that Lori organizes, and we put it in, so they're involved, the planning people, the public's work people, whoever intends to come, who wants to come to those. We haven't got enough information yet where we've really gone out to the boards and the city councils. We've extended that invitation if anybody wants that, but the people who need to be in the know right now are participating pretty regularly on a monthly basis and have been really good.
Okay. Although.
And that's one of the goals, Dr. Japp, is to we want to come up with a plan that everybody can buy into and that all of the communities themselves roll out together. And, you know, there's buy-in from everybody. The policies, et cetera, is something that Bellevue, Papillion, Gretna, and Sarpy County Falls support through their planning agencies. They can all amend zoning requirements, et cetera, to match the needs of the stormwater plan. That's the goal, is to keep engaged through the whole thing and roll out one consistent set.
I have one more question, too, then. I'm not real familiar with this area, but is there a flooding issue the way it is now when heavy rains, does the Buffalo Creek tend to flood at times, or the other creek?
So there's flooding everywhere, and NRCS has done some projects for flood damage reduction down there. You probably don't hear a whole lot about it because there's not a lot of people that live in Southern Sarpy County compared to the populated areas. But, you know, there's a lot of hills, and there's a lot of incised channels. And with incised channels, you know, we don't get the widespread like you get at the bottom of the Penn Creek Basin. So you probably don't hear about it as much. Some of that's just, except for, of course, the Platte River this year in the lower part of the watershed.
John, is that Wyville right by your house?
I don't know what all the full blown plans are, but you know you got to be careful with this basin because it'll come back and bite you. So I see all your plans. I see what you're thinking and what you're trying to do, but I don't think you realize how much water flow. I live where you're talking about. I'm one of the few people you said that live there.
Yeah.
And I come within about this much getting wiped out too. So,
okay.
And if you're going to be changing all this, you better get your ducks in a row because this is pretty nasty in spots.
Sure.
And
we do have preliminary flood maps that we did as part of the baseline conditions, and so.
But like I said, your own eyes need to look at it.
Sure.
Okay. Director Roman,
you had mentioned 30% imperviousness or
Yes, sir.
Can you clarify what that means? Is it a 30% increase from what? What is it today, moving to 30?
Yes. So generally, that was just one. We've looked at 20, 30, 40, 50.
Yep.
30% just means, you know, from today, if you have maybe the average impervious is down there is 2%.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All you generally have is some driveways, you know, but even mostly gravel roads, but you got rooftops, et cetera. In a normal, you know, development, when you add all the rooftops, the streets, the sidewalks, the driveways, 30% is more of a probably middle of the road percentage change. 50% being real high density residential.
So if I just took the area here and took it times 0.3, that's what you're talking about between roofs, CMAT, whatever it is that is now allowing things to flow that will not allow it to permeate into the soil.
What that means is if we had 100 acres, if we just looked at a regular 100-acre plot of ground,
sure.
and 98 of those acres were, or two of those acres were impervious now, it's going to go to 30.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Had you finished, Director Stefanski?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Anyone else have any questions? Roll call.
Yes.
Jeff?
Yes.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you very much. Thank you. Now over to item 10. Review and recommendation for Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership in a local agreement. Lori?
Okay. Can you bring up that other presentation, please? Yes, so we have before you tonight the next interlocal agreement for the continuation of the Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership. This partnership was formed in 2001 with the communities of Bellevue, Boys Town, Gretna, La Vista, Omaha, Papillion, Ralston, and Sarpy County. Those are the current members. And it's continued on up until this point. The current interlocal agreement expires on June 30th of this year, and we are proposing a five-year agreement to continue the work of the partnership. As part of that agreement, every 5 years, we look at the watershed management plan that was adopted in 2009. We look at the work that's been completed to date, the work remaining, and any other data that is applicable, so that we can start to plan for the rest of the implementation of the rest of the plan. In 2014, we adopted two structures as part of the implementation plan, WP6 and WP7, both in Papillion, and those are currently under construction. However, development has steadily increased and has threatened several of the other structures, so we did accelerate the construction of Zirinsky Basin 2, which is in West Omaha, upstream of Zirinsky Lake. And we looked at preliminary design of six other structures to start to account for things that may affect development, such as road corridors, sanitary sewer, and other utilities. So as part of this update, we hired HDR to help look at some of the analysis required. We intended to review the stormwater policies that have been adopted, that were adopted in 2009, and updating the management plan to reflect what has been completed to date, looking at the financing strategies, and developing the next five-year implementation plan from fiscal year 2020 through fiscal year 2024. Generally, the stormwater policies remain unchanged. We did update some of the language. These were originally adopted in 2009, so some things have changed since then. We had some minor changes to the water quality improvement policy to reflect the Papio Missouri River Basin Water Quality Management Plan that was completed in 2018. We didn't really change anything for peak flow reduction. We did look at landscape preservation, restoration, and conservation quite a bit. This is where our creek setback policy is, that deals with stream bank erosion and how far back we should be safe. We know that we have problems. We know that the policy, as written, may not be adequate in some cases. In some cases it is, but there have been a few cases where it's not. We are looking at that policy. We had intended to update it. However, we don't have the Corps of Engineers stream bank stability study that we're working on We don't have the data from that, and we just don't feel that we have enough data to inform a new policy at this time. We do intend to bring that back as soon as that other study is completed, though, for further updates. Erosion and sediment control, you know, that's pretty well regulated at the federal level, so we're just continuing to implement that. Floodplain management, that policy was updated to reflect some changes in FEMA programs and some changes in maps since 2009. And then the stormwater management financing policy was updated to reflect that we did receive bonding authority in 2009 and currently seeking reauthorization for that authority. So as part of the overall plan, we have 9 regional detention basins remaining and 7 water quality basins for a total project cost in 2018 dollars of $244 million. HDR then prepared a financial model using that data of the remaining structures and their estimated cost and looking at expected revenues from both NRD general tax dollars and the watershed fees that are adopted by each community and paid for by new development. The partnership members then met to discuss the priority of those remaining 9 regional basins and 7 water quality basins. A lot of different factors went into this ranking based on total project cost and development around each project site. We have 5 of them, WP1, WP4, WP2, and Dam Site 19, that all have new developments right next to them. And Dam Site 12, and Dam Site 7, actually 6. So that was kind of hard. We did have quite a bit of discussion back and forth. Every community obviously wanted to have those, you know, the structures within their jurisdiction done right away. We know that's not practical. This is the ranking that we did finally decide on as a group, starting with WP1, mainly because we have secured a lot of federal and state funds to help construct that project with the lowering the cost of the district for that one. As far as revenue, we do have the current watershed fees that are collected by each jurisdiction. In 2014, we did adjust those. We did put in an inflation factor, so every year they're adjusted by 2.5% to account for inflation. Those are the current rates right now. To date, we've collected $8.2 million, which seems a little bit low, but that's kind of, they're just kind of a lag in when the policy was enacted and when development actually happened. Here's the watershed funding to date. $97 million from the NRD bond revenue fund. Watershed fees, $8.2 million. The grant programs that we've been able to get, the Water Sustainability Fund, NRCS grants, Nebraska Game and Parks grants, and local reimbursements from the communities where we've built the structures, as well as land rents and surplus sales. So we've spent $114 million to date on projects, and I will note that the grants, the local reimbursements, the land rent, surplus sales, all of that goes to count towards the NRD's 2/3. It does not come off the top. So that's all kind of NRD and then watershed fees. The financial model that HDR created looks at 3 scenarios. We looked at a pay-as-you-go scenario, basically where we get in watershed fees, we have the NRD contribution to the fund, and we use those funds only for projects. And then they also looked at 2 scenarios using bonding. We have about $26 million in our current bonding authority, and so we can use that in one of 2 ways, to either construct projects now or to purchase land to construct projects in the future. And we did not assume any changes to the NRD mill levy. That is at its current rate. So if we go pay-as-you-go, we estimate that we can construct 2 projects in the next 5-year implementation plan. And then one project in the next and then we have quite a long time before we can save money for the next projects after that. Scenario 2A assumes that we issue the $26 million in bonds and use that to construct for three projects immediately. That does move up the other projects, but it still leaves us quite a long time before we can implement a new project. Scenario 2B assumes that we issue the $26 million bond, use that to purchase land at Dam Site 19, which would be the next project, and we're still able to construct three projects in this next implementation period. But with inflation is factored into this model, so the longer we go, the more each project starts to cost. So when we can move it up, we are able to move up a couple years for each project. So again, just a comparison of the scenarios. If we stick with pay-as-you-go, we can build two projects in the next planning period, and we complete 10 projects through the year 2050. If we do the bonding and use that to construct projects, we can do three in the next planning period and 12 through 2050. If we use the bonding to purchase land at Dam Site 19, we can do three projects, and then we get 13 projects completed through the planning horizon. So the proposed program projects for the next implementation plan would be WP1, which is located at 180th and Fort Street in Northwest Omaha, WP4 at 204th and Schramm in Gretna, and WP2 at 180th and Giles. And this is just the map to show where those are each located. And so the recommendations from the study from HDR, again, to implement the three projects in the next planning period, to only adjust fees based on inflation over the life of the project. We do estimate that we still will collect the 1/3 in watershed fees over that 2050 time period. They are recommending that we issue our remaining bond to help accelerate those projects. And they didn't have a recommendation one way or another if we should use it to construct dams or to buy land at the next site. So with that, we do have the interlocal agreement that does reflect this implementation plan based on the data from HDR. And I can answer any questions.
Can we have a motion? We have a motion. Can we have a second? Someone on the committee?
Second.
Anyone from the public wish to speak to this item?
Evening. Sean Lotz, 10404 North 132nd Street. A couple of little items that I would like to educate the new board members on. That in 2001, when this partnership was formed, Douglas County and Washington County were also members, but they withdrew because they did not support the building of dams as part of a flood control and water runoff measure. They believe low-impact development is less intrusive and less costly, and therefore they withdrew from the partnership. Couple of questions I had. I have it in writing, so you can address them, General Manager Winkler, but can I ask why the planning horizon changed to 2050 from 2040? Was there any discussion on that?
When we have seriously worked on this, the projections show that the watershed
So, as part of my request, I'd like to see some of the documentation from MAP, if I could. On page 3 of the document, there's a couple of the bullets that the document addresses regarding let's see, page 3, regarding the need for the partnership agreement. And I would like to request that a couple of these be explored and possibly updated or removed. One of them deals with the disposition is occurring in the watershed reservoirs at an unacceptable rate. I'd like to point out that I believe all except one of the proposed 29 structures listed in the 2009 plan have either been constructed, are currently in your plan, or they're continually listed on the map. So I think it's not an accurate statement saying that the area for these dams are leaving, are not available, because they are. Otherwise, they wouldn't continue to be on your map. I also would like to address something that was discussed a little bit in detail, had to do with the funding, the lack of funding. I believe that funding is now available. Not only do you have the bonding, which you discussed as part of this cash, but if there is a lack of funding, it appears to me it has to do with the watershed fees. Maybe there needs to be some changes and some increases in those fees, because it was my understanding that those fees were to pay for a third of the project, and I just heard here that they've paid $8 million, but a third of the project equates to $38 million, so they're pretty short on what you're collecting from the development community. Therefore, I think there needs to be a little more discussion on increasing those fees to account for it.
Part of that presentation, I've already said that the fees are projected to pay for a third once they're collected all the way through 2050. That was part of the financial analysis that was done.
And
that was explained.
That's also assuming you're not doing any more construction.
No, that's assuming that we construct all of the projects.
Right, but that's assuming that that's based on that number.
Yep, it's based on the 2.5% increase every year on the fees, that the schedule that was provided. And Lori explained that the analysis projected that one-third would come from the development fees through the 2050 timeframe.
And I also I've also seen the chart that showed that these fees should have exceeded $8 million at this point as well.
Yeah, that's
so, correct. You know, your numbers and paper both. Paper
takes aim.
Projections
are still projecting that accurately.
But as part of that, I think that I would like to see, I appreciate the $114 million analysis. I would also, and I've requested it, that I could see the cost by structure over the time frame as well. On page 7, you list that there is an executive committee. I'd like to have an understanding and a list of who serves on that executive committee. And then I also think, as part of the fee structure, I noticed on policy group 6 that you have changed to not have a review on the fees every 3 years. You're changing it to 5, and maybe that needs to be reanalyzed based on development growth.
I think we're projecting we'll reevaluate every 5 years when the agreement becomes due or becomes renewable. So that's
but you shorten that period, and I'm not sure if that's a wise move if we're expecting those fees to continue to fund the projects. And that's why I believe that. And I guess my last question is, if you could kind of go to the map, the first map that's on this printout. On the policy. I would like to understand what is meant by there's a shaded area in the legend that says areas controlled by proposed regional dam basins. What does that mean? So are there easements or controls on those? Are there some kind of regulations on those? What?
So that would be all the projects that drain to that.
Oh, okay. Okay. So it's more the water runoff as opposed to regulation control. Okay. All right. I guess with that, I'd ask this board to review this pretty handily, because according to the agreement, the Papio NRD board serves at the pleasure of the executive committee of the partnership. So therefore, your marching orders are part of this agreement. So I think it's important that this board, who's the one paying for it, my tax dollars are paying for what the partnership wants, I think it's important that you review this agreement and make sure it's what your constituents want. Thank you.
Are you going to submit your questions? You said you had a list of
questions. I'm right here. I'll have them.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak to this item? Directors? Jeff?
Of course. Where's Lori? Okay. Do we have access to these charts and graphs that you just came up with? Do we have those somewhere?
I did not have the presentation in the packet, but we can send it out.
I would like to see that. It's just information I would take a look at. Also, you mentioned something about watershed funding, but also, are these fees to be adopted by each community and each entity?
Mm-hmm.
So they can say no to these fees, or they can do whatever they want with them?
No, it is part of the overall interlocal agreement. So by adopting the agreement, they are agreeing to collect those fees.
Okay. And these fees, how were they set at this rate?
So
I guess my question I'm going to get to eventually, is this enough money to be charged for this?
Yes.
Are they paying what we consider their fair share?
Yes. So the balance between the one-thirds, two-thirds with inflation, the total project cost of everything we can do is $500 million. So the two-thirds is the NRD would pay $334 million, and then the fees cover $167
million. $500 million? Where did that come out?
Yeah, okay, 2050, all the way out to 2050 with inflation, all of that. And so looking at the development capability that's out there, yes, we do believe that over that time frame, we will collect those fees to $167 million.
Okay.
There is a little bit of a delay. This was adopted in 2009. If you remember, that was like the bottom of the market. Nobody was building. We weren't getting fees in at that time. Now, we're starting to catch up to that. It's taken a few years, but we are getting there.
How much is a typical, on average, a lot in Douglas or Sarpy County selling for at this point? Any ideas?
I have no idea.
I mean, certainly there's a range, but what is the range?
60 to 100,000.
So this is, if it's 100,000, this is even 1% is all it would be in that, or 2% at the most. So it's not, mm-hmm. doesn't seem like very much.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that are going to be directly benefiting from it. Seems pretty cheap, actually.
If you had sewer fees, then there's more than this one on a lot, so they start to add up.
Yeah.
It's typically almost $7,000 to pull a building permit.
Right.
But this is one of
them. So, what is it we're supposed to be voting on here exactly?
The adoption of the interlocal agreement.
Which will go before all the other partners can adopt as well.
So in voting for that, we'd be okaying this fee schedule and everything else that's been brought up here, but
yes.
It's difficult to do. I'd like to do the charts again. Okay.
Well, you'll get them before Thursday night.
Yeah, right? We'll get them to you right now.
Are you through, Director?
Yes.
Director Lee?
I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. There's a lot of money here. And you showed where the property owners were going to pay 2.5% through the tax base, correct?
So it's adjusted by 2.5%. So it doesn't have anything to do with their taxes.
Okay, because I saw a graph up there. You were talking about the property owners were going to be responsible for a certain percentage of the tax base. Now, out of these property owners, are they the ones that are going to be affected in this project, or is it everybody?
No, so it's everybody. It's a development fee.
That doesn't seem like that's fair.
Well,
if I live 30 miles away and my taxes go up for this project over here,
it's not a tax. It's a fee that
okay. Well, you have property tax on the board, so I just want to make sure that.
So we use the property tax that the NRD collects is part of that. We pay two-thirds of these projects. One-third comes from new development. So if you are building a new house somewhere, mm-hmm. part of your building permit fees per lot, you're going to pay that fee. And that fee is adjusted by 2.5% every year. If you don't buy a new house, you're not paying this fee. It's only for new development.
Okay. I just want to make sure that the right people, that this is fair, that the right people are going to benefit from this.
Well, and the idea is that new development contributes to increased right. runoff.
Well, that's and my so, point.
Yeah.
If I'm going to go into that new development, then yes, I'm going to have to pay because that's yes. what I'm buying. I want to make sure that it is, in essence, that group that pays.
Yes.
It it doesn't down the road everybody else because of a shortfall. All of a sudden, everybody else has to contribute. Yeah.
It is only on new development.
Okay.
In the watershed.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
And those entities that are collecting it. So just the partners all collect.
Okay.
Are you through direct release? Are you through asking questions? Do you have any other questions?
No, I'm good.
Director Teaser?
I just want to make it clear. This does not involve, it only involves the Capio, not the Platte River Valley, the Valley area, but $260,000 lot.
Okay.
It's switching to Capio.
It's a high dollar area.
I'm good.
Any other questions from directors? Roll call.
Yeah.
No.
Kinski?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yep.
And?
And Bill get the additional.
Yes, amendments. We'll send out our letter.
Okay. Thank you. Item number 11, review and recommendation of Dakota County Rural Water System rate increase. Zach Nelson.
Good evening. For those of you that are new to the board, the district operates three rural water systems. One in Washington County, one in Thurston County, one in Dakota County. The one in Dakota County has over 100 miles of water mains and has approximately 660 customers. We've purchased our water from Dakota City. That water is treated, so in essence, all we have to do is just convey it to the rural community. Last time rates were increased on the Dakota County Rural Water System was 2012. Since that time period, luckily, we've been able to keep costs down by implementing just cost-saving strategies, kind of doing some maintenance ourselves. However, we're kind of getting to a point now where in order to kind of maintain decent cash reserves and stay ahead of maintenance, we need to implement a rate increase. Last summer, in July of 2018, Dakota City, which I mentioned, who provides our bulk sales, they increased our water rate from $1 per 1,000 gallons to $1.30 per 1,000 gallons. And so this was discussed with the Rural Water Advisory Board. There's a panel of, between 9 to 10 individuals in Dakota County who meet once a month, talk about water rates and operations on the system. And they had asked me to put together an analysis on raising rates. So a solution I came up with was the existing base charge is $24.50 just to have that account active. Proposed increasing that to $27 a month. And then there's different commodity rates depending on usage. And it proposed increasing those commodity rates 30 cents to mirror what Dakota City had raised our rates. So overall, what we're doing is just kind of keeping up with inflation as well as allowing us just to put a little bit of money away every year to keep up with maintenance. We do have a elevated storage tank, a standpipe tank, and a pump station there that we have to maintain. As of right now, the system is cash positive. However, with the revenue we're going to generate from this, it'll allow us to kind of continue replacing valves and as well as we're going to have to replace a vehicle next year on that system.
Thank you. We can have a motion on this side.
I so move. We go with that.
Have a motion?
Second.
Second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Director.
One, the 9 or 10 people on the advisory board, are they people who are also, they get their water from this system?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So they're the ones that recommended raising this?
Okay. Correct.
So they're going to be paying for it themselves?
Yep, correct.
Gosh.
Yep. This is something. They've been mulling it around for almost a better part of a year. To put it into perspective, you know, the average customer, if you're not watering your lawn a lot, you're using somewhere between 3 and 5,000 gallons. So it's going to, your average bill is going to go up somewhere between $3 and $5 a month. So it's not a huge cost.
So the 3 cents, that's just a straight pass through from Dakota City?
Correct.
The 250 is to increase your cash reserves to pay for insurance?
Yep, correct.
So this is separate? This doesn't come out of our regular budget?
No. Nope. Completely, yeah. The water systems are self-sustaining, so they have to essentially pay for themselves.
Because you're selling a commodity, so you can't mix the two.
Okay.
And one of those, Zach's crew and Zach himself, they've done quite a bit of work to all the rural water systems to save money by either doing the work themselves or, and so, you know, hats off to them. They've done their part to kind of keep rates as low as possible. So he's a little bit modest there saying that they've done a few things, but they've done a lot.
Yeah, I was going to just say that exact same thing. I've gotten to know some of the people that work up there as well as Zach, and I'm very, very impressed with what they do up there. They do a tremendous job. They save a lot of money by doing the work themselves.
Yeah, point taken. Thank you, gentlemen.
Any other questions from the director? Roll call.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi. Thank you very much. Item number 12, review and recommendation of FY 2020 equipment requirements. Nicole? Yes.
Good evening, gentlemen. I'm here tonight with a review and recommendation of the fiscal year 2020 equipment requirements. Each department in the NRD identified their equipment requirements, and the equipment committee reviewed each item and made recommendations to the general manager for purchase. The general manager reviewed the recommendations and made further changes to the list. The first item is aerial photo and video equipment at the cost of $5,000, which would include training. And I just wanted to show you a couple videos of what these drone type equipment can do. This video is used to view the edge of the West Branch system channel benches for scour and provides valuable information in a fraction of the time that we'd be able to get it by vehicle or by foot. So you can see it covers a lot of ground. It's saving manpower, saving time, saving money. And I'll just...
This is a drone?
Yes.
This is a drone, yeah. This is actually going to be promotional video of Flanagan Lake that we took by drone as well. And actually, currently in our FY19 budget, there is available funds to purchase this immediately if the board chooses to do so. So we don't actually have to wait till the fiscal year 2020 to purchase this or choose to get it sooner. For machinery and equipment, we have a power washer for Dakota County at $5,600. We have the second of three annual payments on the Rover video pipe inspection equipment. That's the equipment I brought to board last year that the board approved. And this payment would be $38,466. We have a GPS survey unit that would be replacing a 15-year-old equipment, which soon will be unsupported, and that's $25,000. We have a 2020 CAT motor grader. This will be replacing the district's current 1999 John Deere motor grader that has 4,000 end-of-year miles. This is actually state contract pricing, and we can go either with four or five annual payments, and we're going to determine which payment we go with after we know what the budget is. We have a 2020 Flex Wing rotary mower, and that would be replacing the district's current 2011 Rhino mower, and that's $12,250. And then our annual trade-in for a Bobcat skid loader, and that's going to be used for O&M and for park maintenance, and that's $6,950. In addition, for machinery and equipment, we have two CAT skid loaders and a CAT hydraulic excavator. These are annual leases, and they come out of account 590, which is maintenance, dams, equipment rentals. This is the equipment that Zach Nelson brought to the board last month for 2019, and this will be for 2020. For automobiles and trucks, we have a 2020 full-size chassis cab, four-wheel drive, 1.25-ton pickup with a flatbed, and that would be with the trade-in of the district's 2002 Ford flatbed, which will have predicted 116,000 end-of-year miles, and we've put over $34,000 in maintenance on that vehicle, and that would be $40,000. A one-ton chassis cab with a 9-foot service body with a gooseneck hitch. This vehicle is needed to keep up with higher demands and larger tow capacities. And we would be trading in our current 2012 Ford F-250 flatbed with almost 160,000 end-of-year miles, and that's also 40,000. And the final one is a mid-size extended cab with toolbox. This will be with the trade of a 2013 Ram with over 144,000 end-of-year miles. The cost of this would be $35,000, but this will be reimbursed by rural water. So this is one of the things Zach was saying. He will be needing to replace a vehicle next year. So that does not come out of our budget. For office equipment, the first four items of office equipment are going out of warranty and need to be replaced. We have three servers that provide roughly 80% of our computing services, $45,000. 20 desktops at $26,000. Omaha backup server, $7,000. Blair backup server, $6,000. And then our annual purchases of parts, printers, and tablets for $10,000. And director equipment for $5,000. In addition, we would like to do some more boardroom upgrades. These would be miscellaneous projects like a front monitor, lobby monitor that could be used for either overflow and information for the NRC. And other things like replacing the hanging microphones. And that's $37,000. So this is a comparison of what we're asking for in 2020 and what we budgeted in 2019. So depending on if we do the 4 or 5 payments on that piece of equipment, our budget this year would be either $376,427 or $364,236. And so we are recommending that the FY 2020 equipment requirements be approved as listed, subject to FY 2020 funding. And I can answer any questions.
Thank you. Do we have a motion on this item?
Move staff recommendation.
Second.
The motion and a second. Anyone from the public wish to speak to the item?
Yeah. Mike, you want to talk about the survey unit as far as if we can get it? In, if we can trade in the next 60 days, how much we'll get in trade in?
Yeah, there's a we get $8,000 back from the old unit that's going out of going to be a for it goes through the end of June. I think it's
well, that's our fiscal year starts July 1st, so we would like on that one to take advantage of that $8,000. So if you approve this on Thursday. We would know that at least the drone, if you approve that, we can get that quickly and then also move on this after July 1st to get that $8,000 back in that trade-in. Because if we don't, if we wait till September, we'll lose it and we'll pay the full amount for the new replacement.
Is that because the software is going out?
Software also, so that unit runs off of modem, and I understand that they're going to
it. Yeah, I understand. Okay, directors, I guess no one from the public.
I have one quick question. How long is the warranty on computers and servers? You said they're going out of warranty. How long is a typical warranty? 3 years.
And when you get them, they're out of already. Absolutely.
Probably so.
Director Weiss?
Is there a specific group you go through when you buy your computer systems, or is it just whatever you can find?
We have a very good
Okay. Okay. So you have an actual group that'll come in and set everything up for you and.
Do it all.
Okay. Okay. That's what I figured. I didn't know if you had somebody that would help you do that or.
Government.
Okay. All right. And I got one question on some of that equipment that's there. Do you sell that on a secondary market on some of the bigger equipment? Because some of it didn't. Are you just going to keep it, or what do you do with that?
It's traded in.
It's traded in, yeah.
Okay, because some of it didn't say traded. I thought some of it just said that was replacing this or replacing that. I didn't know what you guys did.
Oh, yeah, replacing generally. That's the equipment that we'll be trading in.
Oh, okay.
We try to trade in.
Okay.
Director Spence?
John, I know you've gone through this several times, but how do you get a brand new 1.25-ton truck for $40,000?
That's with the 34,000 with the or with the trade-in. We figure the trade-in value, minus we deduct from the value of the truck. So that's where you get the $40,000.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been pretty spot on.
Yeah. Yeah, we've been pretty good on Nicole and the main.
Seems like you can't get it for $40,000. So.
They're that good. The equipment committee does a great job billing those guys. So.
Okay. Don't keep it as long as they
stay. I have one
more question. 34 maintenance.
I have one more question.
Oh, sorry. Oh,
that's right. You mentioned boardroom updates for $37,000. It seems like my first house didn't cost $37,000, so I was wondering what we're going to get for $37,000.
Bill, you want to go through?
David, you can go into detail.
We're going to be honored for
you're going to save my neck.
I'll try.
My hero.
And then of the hanging, my only two of them are.
Director Thompson.
Thanks for that clarification. So you're going to have cameras and everything in here?
Wow.
And that's almost like over-exaggeration of what the heck we do. I mean, these don't work, but we got these within the last couple of years. That's just my opinion. I would like a breakdown of that $37,000. I think we've had two times we've overflown. Overflowed. I sent a drone.
You know what you mean.
Overflowed the room there, and we've gotten by. I mean, that's just sounds like we're getting too fancy for our needs, in my opinion.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yeah.
Jeff?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
And Chairperson.
Hi. Thank you. I think that concludes tonight's meeting.
All right.
We're done.
Nice work, Tim. That was.